This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Futuro.
From Futuro Media and PRX, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, the rise of disinformation and misinformation targeting Latino and Latina voters. As the country enters the 2022 midterm election cycle, more and more attention has been given to how disinformation and misinformation are impacting Latino and Latina voters. This roundtable discussion is going to kick off our 2022 election cycle coverage right here at Latino USA. And I'm joined by my In the Thick political podcast co-host, Julio Ricardo Varela. Hey, Julio.
Hey, Maria.
We're also joined by guests Maria Teresa Kumar, founding president and CEO of the voting rights organization Voto Latino, and Jaime Longoria, manager of research and training for the Disinfo Defense League at the Media Democracy Fund. Hey, Maria Teresa.
Thanks for having me. Gracias.
Hey, Jaime.
Thanks for having me on.
So today we're going to be talking about unpacking disinformation and misinformation in our community, specifically, yes, the Latino, Latina, Latinx community. So the midterms are happening in November, and Latinos and Latinas make up the largest ethnic voting bloc. And so there's so much at stake in terms of Democrats and Republicans. The Democrats are desperately trying to hold on to their slim majority in the Senate. And with 35 Senate seats up for election, 35, this could really tilt the balance either way. It could set the stage, obviously, for the 2024 presidential election. And we know, of course, you got to cue the jingle.
Ding, ding, ding.
Latinos and Latinas are not a monolith, right? So we may be the second largest voting bloc, voting cohort, but we don't vote as one, right? We're not a monolith. This notion of disinformation often targeted to Spanish-speaking voters has a lot of people freaking out, I think rightly so.
Yeah.
And there are so many layers to this conversation, from who's behind the disinformation campaigns to who is being targeted, how they're being targeted, and what is the impact of all of this. So we're going to start at the beginning and try to get to the root of the issue. So Maria Teresa Kumar, from your perspective, where does this disinformation come from?
Mm-hmm.
And why is it targeting specifically Latinos and Latinas? And where is it happening?
Disinformation, oftentimes targeting the Latino community, is to do twofold. One, we are a new community in participation. We've been here for centuries. But when you think about who is a young voter, it is squarely a young Latino. You know, the most common age, Maria, among white people is 58 years old. The most common age among Latinos is 11 years old.
Wow.
Whoa.
When I say we're young, we're very young,
wow,
right? And so we're starting to come of age. And most of us are first gen, meaning we are born in this country and trying to navigate the political process. And there are nefarious actors who see our potential. And not only do they want to restrict our vote, but they want to give us dirty information so that we can stay sick, because it's a lot of anti-COVID information so that we don't get our vaccines, but then also that we don't trust the government. That is the entity that if we vote them in, they can transform our lives every single day. The only reason we are even on a progressive trajectory in this country is because Latinos secured California 25 years ago. Punto. And so the disinformation is very much targeting Latinos because not only of our potential, but because the present day participation that we're seeing.
Right. So Jaime, it is very targeted. That's clear. From your perspective, just take us like 64,000 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
What are you seeing in terms of disinformation? Because Maria Teresa really laid it out for us. Is there something you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think we're all probably tired of hearing this, but just defining what mis and disinformation is really important. So misinformation is information that people share that they don't necessarily know is false or misleading. Disinformation, on the other hand, is information that has sort of a purpose, right? Somebody puts it out there for political, monetary gain or to do some sort of damage, right? I think, as you said, to kind of get off the ground a little bit. From the perspective that I come to this research is that we're all susceptible, right? Across the political spectrum, across all demographics, across all ages, because mis and disinformation is really emotional. It works to really target your emotional reactions, right? And we are all sort of predisposed to believing specific things. There are examples when things that we have called mis and disinformation or a conspiracy theory has been true. And different communities have different examples for that. And that sort of sets us up to be predisposed to believing certain things. The other thing that I want to say is that it doesn't really matter. Like, facts don't really matter. What matters is whether or not information aligns with your perception of the world, right? Just because you hear something doesn't necessarily mean that you care about the veracity of it, but whether or not it elicits sort of an emotion in you that makes you either feel comfortable or makes you feel like you need to do something. Where the problem for me lies is that Spanish language is not prioritized by the platforms. And the other thing is that there aren't really any sort of safeguards or safety nets in the Latino Hispanic media ecosystem.
Yeah.
And I think that also has a lot to do with like this inherent misunderstanding, as María Teresa pointed out, like this inherent understanding of what the Latino community actually is. And that happens in media and in policy. And there's also a lack of understanding of where Latinos congregate online and where they get their information online and also offline, because that really matters as well, right?
Right. You know, there's so many points both of you have brought up, and to give that context. And one of the things that we also wanted to point out as we cover the election cycle, right, the midterms, through our Latino and Latina lenses here on the show is, you know, it's already politically charged, right? In a post January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, you know, we have the coronavirus. María Teresa, you mentioned it, that you've only added fuel to the issue of misinformation and disinformation. Then you have these false claims about COVID vaccines, to the politicization of mask mandates. These different types of misinformation and disinformation, they go hand in hand, right? On one hand, health and science, and on the other hand, political campaigns. So how do you think this is all going to play together in the midterms? Because it is a strategy, no? Or is that too simplistic of a take?
No, I don't think that's simplistic. I think there is a strategy behind this, especially when we talk about disinformation. But if we zoom out also, I'm a big fan of zooming out, apparently. If we zoom out a little bit, like
64,000 feet, yes.
Looking at the conversation, I mean, a lot of the things that we're dealing with right now actually have their source in mis and disinformation, or even malinformation, which is information that's true but is used in a context that's harmful, right? When we talk about like a lot of the border policies that are going on, there was a lot of fear-mongering, right? And there continues to be a lot of fear-mongering there. And also now all of these restrictions on voting rights, like that comes from the big lie, right? From all of these claims about election fraud that happened in 2020. In some ways, we can see that there is sort of this playbook, which is not new. I think we've seen it for as long as America has had politics. But now it's sort of interacting with platforms that incentivize polarizing content and that really have a way of making all this stuff spread so widely.
María Teresa, how do you think this will play out in the upcoming midterm elections? What are the specific things that you're seeing?
I mean, there's a lot of challenges. We saw the disinformation in 2019 going into Florida in March, and then we kept tracking it, and we saw the firestorm of the disinformation hitting the Rio Grande Valley the mid-September of 2020. And we were trying to raise the alarm, but no one pays attention to the Latino community, not recognizing that Latinos, the disinformation that we're receiving, we're often the canary in the coal mine.
Exactly.
You know, oftentimes they use us because it's low-hanging fruit on Facebook to serve you a terrible ad. Then you figure out what really sticks, and then you send it off into the rest of these closed networks. Yep. And we are in this crisis mode of Latinos getting disinformation because our media is balkanized. No one has recognized us as a force for media consumption. And so we have to go and have a different level of discernment when we go on YouTube.
Yeah.
And none of these folks have to tell us the truth. Yet I have to tell you, you know, we talk a little bit about the midterms. Sadly, South Texas wasn't a surprise because, again, we saw it in 2020. Yeah. And then, believe it or not, we saw that firestorm hitting southern Arizona 2 weeks out of the election. Mm-hmm. The level of sophistication, they recognize they don't need all Latinos. They just need to skim off the top in certain areas and create incertitude.
Right. And I think one of the points talking about the online platforms, mm-hmm. and this report has been cited previously, and I've written about it, and Maria's talked about it, that after the 2020 presidential election, research from the online advocacy group Avaaz found that Facebook failed to flag 70% of Spanish language misinformation. Mm-hmm. And according to the Pew Research Center in 2021, Latinos use YouTube, Instagram, Snapchat, WhatsApp, and TikTok more than any other demographic group. So you both have mentioned it. Latinos are online a lot, which makes the likelihood of running into false information higher.
Right, because if our average age is 10, 11, 12, we're young, we are going to be, our kids, our grandkids are going to be on social media and consuming all of this media. So that's just like a data point that's a given. And how we consume media also is different. So even though Spanish is the second most commonly spoken language in the United States, social media companies have not dedicated resources to flag and take down Spanish language misinformation. It's there, but it's not really enough. And this misinformation can be harder to detect if it's a video or if it's shared on a private WhatsApp group. I'm sure all of you have, you know, like, how did this suddenly end up on my WhatsApp feed? Like, how is this?
Usually it's my mother. I mean, if we're honest.
Right.
But you really make an important point. Folks don't realize, imagine Facebook is the entryway drug to radicalization. Mm-hmm. And I don't say that lightly. If you go onto Facebook, the stuff that they're saying oftentimes is extreme. But what they do then is on the comments, they will tell you to join another group that is either on WhatsApp or that is on Telegram. And then once they're in those closed groups, that is when people become really radicalized. I mean, I have gone into some of these rooms and the chats are absolutely misogynistic, racist, anti-government. I mean, you name it, and it is there, and there's no monitoring that happens. And at the same time, Meta wants to wash their hands and saying, well, it's not our fault. Well, if you were doing the exact same thing right now on radio, you would get in trouble.
Right. And the thing is that it's, again, as you said, it's not just happening online. You mentioned radio. So Spanish language radio stations, especially in South Florida, have been criticized for spreading disinformation on the air, including claims that the left-wing movement Antifa was behind the January 6th Capitol attack,
right,
the attempted state of coup d'etat in the United States, and saying that it was Antifa. So there's an element of trust when information is given in Spanish. And that's important, too. It's actually something very particular about Spanish language communications, right? It is always in a sense of like, we care about you, we're interested, trust us. So why is it that Spanish language disinformation is so much more prevalent and unregulated? And is it because we are that language that was just like, well, it's the other, it's the language you don't really want to talk about. We don't really want to have to deal with this. I mean, is that where it starts? And why don't you start us off, Jaime? In particular, why is disinformation and misinformation such a problem when we're talking about Spanish language in the United States?
It has a lot to do with what you were pointing to, Maria. The more important and the more politically viable, the more weight that the Latino community carries, the more there are going to be efforts to kind of muddy the waters. I think that says something, that we have reached a moment in our history as a community where we have a lot of political power. There are other sort of entities, other groups, other people that have the incentive to sort of co-opt that for themselves. Since I'm sort of like knee deep in all this stuff every day, like one thing that I always think about is how sort of these conversations are getting politicized. I don't really like to frame it as these are right-wing efforts to shift people mm-hmm. to the Republican Party. That's not how I see this. For me, I feel if you really get down into what's actually happening is that there are a lot of grievances and wedge issues within our community that we as a community have not yet addressed that open space for other people to come in and manipulate the conversations that we're having and to sort of affect the ways in which we see public health initiatives. That's not to say that it's divorced from any political context at all, right? Like I said, it's disinformation. There are sort of people behind the scenes pulling the strings. But there's something to say about the fact that not all of this comes from outside of the community, right? A lot of the times it's people from within our own community, people from within our own political spaces that are the ones sort of facilitating and spreading misinformation, right? And we don't always know. The fact that we're a growing community that has so much political power today is really why I think we're at the forefront of a lot of this targeting.
Coming up on Latino USA, what outreach is being done with Latino and Latina voters to combat the problem of disinformation? And is the work making a difference? Stay with us. No te vayas.
Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino. Odoo, modern management made simple. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, we're back. And here's the rest of our conversation about disinformation and misinformation with my In the Thick co-host, Julio Ricardo Varela. We're joined by Maria Teresa Kumar of Voto Latino and Jaime Longoria from the Disinfo Defense League at the Media Democracy Fund. Let's jump back in. So the thing is, Maria Teresa, I think that you would probably say to Jaime, actually, it is very specifically being targeted to shift the politics.
Yeah.
That is the intention. I mean, do you think that that is?
I do.
Because Jaime is kind of like, it's just like a vulnerability, but you're like, nah, there's a much more specific and I would say nefarious intention here.
When you take a step back of why do you have disinformation? And Jaime said something that is right. We've always had disinformation in politics. Autocrats are the ones that peddle disinformation. Non-functioning democracies are the people who peddle disinformation because they don't want you to be able to trust anything or anyone, let alone your government. And that's the reason that Voto Latino got in the game was because we saw two barriers to a thriving democracy for the Latino community. One is the voting restrictions that are very much as a result of the boom in the Latino population. Most people don't realize that the gutting of the Voting Rights Act, Shelby County, Maria, had a 297% increase in the Latino population in 2010. That is not by accident. And then the other one is disinformation. If you have a new community that is learning about democracy, that it's learning that their government may work because the government that their parents fled may not work, then you actually have a window of distrust that you have because they're getting familiar with it. And again, I don't think that it's by accident that the people that are heavily targeted in our politics and in disinformation are the extreme right, people that are uneducated white men who are sitting on the fence and getting cultivated, and the Latino community who is growing because they also see our potential that seem to be aligned with the democratic values.
Right. And also, just to be clear, mm-hmm. I don't completely divorce this from politics either, honestly. There are Latinos within the community that do take part in spreading mis and disinformation, obviously. And I think a large part of the discourse really flattens what Latinos believe in, right? I think this is a lot of questions that I got from reporters were like, why are Latinos believing in misinformation shifting to the right? We can't really say for sure. There's a conversation about whether or not disinformation actually affects real world change. And obviously the answer we would all say is yes, of course. But we don't have any quantifiable evidence of that. We don't know how it exactly does that. We don't know if it's enabling people to do it or if it's the cause of people actually going and shifting their beliefs completely. I think we really still need to study this a lot more.
Right.
But I think what I'm very wary about as someone who does this research is that the politicization of mis and disinformation studies is a really dangerous trend. This is only a part of the picture of what is like a sort of a wider political malaise. Society-wide trust in institutions is completely lost. And I'm not denying that there are campaigns out there that are working towards shifting Latino sentiment, but mis and disinformation is a symptom of a larger issue. And this is only one way in which that's being enabled.
Yeah, no. And I think that, you know, one of the things in this context is the organizing and outreach that's being done with Latino and Latina voters to counter this issue. So just a couple examples at the grassroots level, there's a lot of local organizations are partnering to get accurate information about COVID to their communities, right? And some Spanish language radio stations like Radio Bilingüe and Radio Indígena have programs aimed at providing health resources for their listeners. Producer Lisa Salinas spoke with Jose Munoz, who is the deputy communications director at United We Dream Action, which is the first and largest immigrant youth-led organization, about the work their organization is doing to combat disinformation. Let's listen to what Jose said.
There are some Latinx folks who are solely consuming stories about immigration. So these are more tactical, more transactional stories about the system of immigration. Those tend to be young Latino males and older Latinx audiences over 35 across gender. And then the second piece of consumption for folks is immigrant stories. These are stories about people. You know, these are stories about folks who are seeking a better life in the U.S. One of the things that we found within that was that young Latino males, they have sort of a content vacuum where they're not actually getting a lot of stories about immigrants. The immigration stories that they're getting tend to come from more conservative places. And it really leaves this content vacuum for them that makes them easier targets for racialized disinformation about the role that immigrants play in this country.
That was a specific example. And both of you are working on a larger scale, like the Latino Anti-Disinformation Lab that you co-chair, Maria Teresa and Jaime. In addition to your research on COVID-19 vaccine misinformation, you work with the Disinformation Defense League, which seeks to fight racialized disinformation that targets Black, Latino, and other communities of color. Jaime, talk to us about the work you're doing. How do you measure impact and success? So we'll start with you, Jaime, and then Maria Teresa, you can jump in.
What we do is basically we're a network of more than 250 organizations who come together under the umbrella of combating the harmful effects of mis and disinformation, specifically looking at communities that are racialized in the United States. We try to make these connections between folks on the ground, not only working at the national level, but also folks working within their communities at really smaller community organizations. And we want them not only to connect with themselves and to talk about the strategies that they're using, but also giving them access to experts that are doing advocacy research, like someone like myself that works in nonprofits and does the research every day, looking at what narratives are trending and what's going on online. And we connect them with academics as well, because there's a whole world of people in academia doing this work that they never have any contact with folks on the ground. That's the main thing that we're trying to do, bridging all of these gaps. My wider goal is really to pull all of this expertise. I want to give that to the community, right? I want to foster in community expertise, because who is there better to understand their community than the people who actually live in it? And we have a couple of areas specifically looking at Asian American disinformation and hate speech. We're looking at immigration dis and malinformation. We're looking at also how best do we transfer the research into real world action, because that's something that's really lacking in this space. We have the research, but how does that look like in the real world? How do we do this stuff? So we're kind of all over the place, but the main goal really is connecting and bridging the gaps of this whole area of study so that people can really come together and start to make solutions and not just talk about the issue itself.
Yeah.
So Maria Teresa, I'm wondering, I mean, that is a lot. Jaime said we're kind of all over the place. And really, when you're talking about this, the thing about disinformation and misinformation is that it too is kind of all over the place. And I think that's part of the strategy.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing, how you measure it. And also, I'm assuming that when you were trying to get this issue out there, you had a lot of people just like, huh? And so you faced a lot of challenges in trying to launch this thing that you're taking on. It's not like it's a building, you know, it's a much more complicated, right? You know, so tell us a little bit about those challenges.
We did something very simple. In 2020, we created a model where we identified people who were sitting on the fence when it came to any type of electoral participation. And this was a big sample size. We did 400,000 people. We divided them into two groups. 200,000 received, you know, a go buy a Gillette shaver for your legs. And the other 200,000 received a Voto Latino register to vote ad. The 200,000 that received that ad, they were 9 times more likely to search voter registration information and how to register to vote. That is indicators of behavioral change. Mm-hmm. Voto Latino in 2020 registered over 650,000 people. 78% of them went out and voted. But we learned so much that we then applied it to COVID because we found that the person who was vaccine hesitant had very similar markers than the person that was low propensity voter hesitant. And so we were able to, again, work very closely serving ads. And this time it was even more enlightening. The people who saw the COVID vaccine ad, we did this in July of last year, high density Latino zip codes, could have had the vaccine by the middle of July, but had decided not to. Those people that saw our ads, 54 times more likely to search, get a COVID vaccine. And so now what we have in the field is using the information of how to identify people who are vaccine hesitant. Again, learning what are they consuming. Oftentimes we'll say, you know, Latinos consume X amount of Twitter. That's important, but what are they consuming on Twitter? That's equally, if not more important. And so that's where we are right now. We hope to have that study done by the middle of June, and then we will share it with our partners and grassroots organizers. We want to be able to do the research, but then apply it immediately into the field because time is short. And once someone has created a real distrust of government, that person, we will never be able to bring them back.
Mm, yeah.
So to bring it back kind of to the beginning, it's happening because of the incredible demographic growth and strength of the Latino and Latina voter. It's actually about voters who can, as Maria Teresa said, shift what's happening in this country. So there's a tremendous amount of power within the Latino and Latina voting population. You know, just empirically there is. So we actually want to understand a little bit more about the impact of the campaigns, right? So the biggest thing that we have to acknowledge is that a huge chunk of people, Latinos and Latinas too, you know, this whole notion of is there misinformation? Is there disinformation? Is it a real issue? We know that there are smart, politically engaged people out there who think that, you know, that this is a hoax or this is just like, it's the leftist media that has you thinking that there's misinformation and disinformation. And we have to reconcile these two ideas. One, that there actually is harmful Spanish language disinformation targeting our communities. And at the same time that Latinos and Latinas are not a monolith and that they're not always easily manipulated, right? That these two things can happen at the same time. So Maria Teresa, what do you say to people who think that, oh, you know what? Just calm down. Cálmense. Because you're saying actually the opposite. You're saying Latinos and Latinas are the canaries in the mine in terms of mis and disinformation. So what do you say to the people who are like, cálmate, Maria Teresa?
No, overreacting.
Yeah, you're overreacting.
So first of all, I'm sure as a good Latina, no one could say cálmate because it's like, what's everybody here?
It's not in the vocabulary. Yeah, I got you.
Clearly. No, but when you look at disinformation and the amount of harm it's caused, let's go back to COVID. If you look at the deaths among Latinos age 0 to 24, age 24 to 34, like if you look at that categorically, we are roughly about 20% of the population across the board. But for people under the age of of 65, we represent close to 30% of the deaths within each age category. We are overrepresenting in those age categories. And one of the leading factors of it is because we were vaccine hesitant. And it has everything to do with the way people are presenting information to us. We don't know how to necessarily navigate it because we trust our friends more than we trust, you know, someone in a lab coat.
Right. But I think this is the part where, at least in covering this issue as a political journalist and as an opinion writer and you know, editor, there still is this feeling that this is a non-issue, Jaime, that this is way too much attention is being given to this. Latino and Latino voters are being portrayed as dumb because they fall for this. And it's disrespectful and insulting and patronizing, and people are free to decide on whoever they want to vote for. So Is there a disconnect there? Because that's the part where I don't understand. Is this a political issue? Is this going to impact voters? Or is it just Democrats saying, hey, Latinos, you're being misinformed, vote for us, and Republicans saying, you know, don't trust those Democrats because they think you're all stupid. Your thoughts, Jaime?
Yeah, I think that's exactly the balance that I try to tread when I talk about the research that I do. And I think, Maria, you put it really well earlier as well, that we can have bigger conversations about yes and, right? In a way, the way that we talk about this mis- and disinformation discourse is mis- and disinformation in itself. We can say that, like, there are political powers here who want to co-opt the language of mis- and disinformation for the benefit of their political goals. And not just in spreading mis- and disinformation, but in convincing communities that they should or should not believe in it. I think it's grossly irresponsible to tell people that this is overblown. I think it's a very serious issue. For me, what we still need to do as an area of study is we need to really look closer to what the actual impact is. And it's a difficult question to answer. Like, we know what we've seen. We know what people say. Mm-hmm. The election fraud narratives in 2020. And then the insurrection. Also, vaccine hesitancy. I could go on and on and on and on.
No, you can go through the list. It's all good.
It's scary. We can laugh. But actually, you know, if you are consuming this and it's overwhelming and it's constant.
Yeah.
Tiene impacto.
Right.
Yeah, that's exactly it. For me, the question is, like, to what measurable extent did this push and enable people? Like, were these folks susceptible already to this mis- and disinformation? Or did this just provide a framing for the things that they already wanted to do? Does it make it easier to rally people around a specific cause? Like, yeah, we've seen that. It definitely does. Absolutely, there's something here. Absolutely, we need to pay attention. Absolutely, we need to sound the alarms. And we're doing that too. But there's still a barrier of how this actually shifts sentiment. We need to be really cautious because sometimes blaming mis- and disinfo lets other institutions off the hook for their own failures.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I want at the center of this.
Yeah.
But also, it's dangerous. And people are being targeted, and it's being used for political means. I want to have that yes and conversation.
Thank you for putting in that context and for all of your work. And thanks to the three of you for joining me on Latino USA for this really important conversation. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you, Maria. It's always great to be on Latino USA with you.
This episode was produced by Noor Saudi and edited by Julio Ricardo Varela. It was mixed by JJ Carubin. The Latino USA team includes Andrea Lopez Cruzado, Marta Martinez, Daisy Contreras, Mike Sargent, Julieta Martinelli, Victoria Estrada, Patricia Zulbarán, Alejandra Salazar, Reinaldo Leaños Jr., and Julia Rocha, with help from Raúl Pérez. Special thanks to the rest of the In the Thick team as well, Harsha Nahata, Lisa Salinas, and Sarah Hershander. And remember, subscribe to In the Thick. Our director of engineering is Stephanie LeBeau. Our senior engineer is Julia Caruso. Our associate engineer is Gabriela Baez. Our marketing manager is Luis Luna. Our fellows are Elisa Baena, Monica Morales Garcia, and Andrew Viñales. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. And remember, no te vayas. And see you on our next episode. Bye.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. The Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
I'm like a sad goth, and I'm very pessimistic.
No, I'm trying to make
No.
Is Maria Teresa a sad goth too?
No, I'm not built that way. Sorry.
Okay, just want to double check because I'm with Jaime. I'm a sad goth too.